Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! Ha-ha! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. We have one more best of edition of the show during the holiday season to bring you. And again, we're recapping some of the best segments that we have had over the past year. Christmas Day kind of signifies the start of the NBA basketball season, I think, for a lot of casual fans. It's kind of a tradition in the NBA. Well, on today's show, I'm going to replay two interviews that we have had with one of my favorite sports writers, Roland Lanzenby, one of the great sports biographers of our time. And he joined me on two separate occasions to talk about his Michael Jordan biography and then the Kobe Bryant biography. And I think if you listen to these two interviews back to back, it's going to be really fascinating because there's a lot of connections from Kobe to MJ. And Roland does a terrific job of digging deep into what made these two greats, two of the greatest to ever play the game, click. I'm really looking forward to today's show. Hopefully you are as well. Listen to Roland Lanzenby and what he can teach us about Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan. That's coming up next here on this best of edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM.
Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy, located adjacent to the Castle View Urgent Care Center, is your new neighborhood pharmacy. Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy accepts all insurance providers and can help you transfer your existing prescriptions over. It's as simple as stopping in and providing them with the necessary information, or you can call them at 637-3667. They also offer the only pharmacy drive-up window in Carbon County. Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy, your neighborhood pharmacy.
Tis the season for shopping, and sales seem to be popping up everywhere. Well, Desert View Federal Credit Union has got a sale for you. How about a car loan for 2.99% APR? That's right, now you can save on interest too by getting your auto loan at Desert View Federal Credit Union. Go ahead, get that new car for Christmas. This holiday loan special won't be around for long, so be sure to get into a branch today.
Membership and eligibility apply. Loans on approved credit. Member NCUA.
At Castleview Physical Therapy, they know your health is very important to you. That is why they take pride in offering you the highest quality of rehabilitation. Castleview is the only clinic in the area to be able to offer aquatic therapy. Their warm water pool is inviting and effective in providing a safe method to heal injuries. They are happy to offer this service that has been proven to be one of the best rehab environments to make exercise safer, more relaxing, and less painful. Come in and see how Castleview's aquatic therapy can help make your road to recovery a pleasant one. Call Castleview Physical Therapy today at 636-4841.
You were listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM.
16 seconds left. Bulls down one. Michael against Russell. 12 seconds. 11. 10. Jordan. Jordan to drive. Hangs. Fires. Yes!
He scores! He scores! The Bulls lead 87-86 with 5 and 2 tenths left. And now they're one stop away.
I wish I lived.
Only fitting that we return to the show with Michael Jordan's final shot in a Chicago Bulls uniform as we bring in our next guest.
Sorry, Jazz fans.
Yeah, and Utah, that one stings a little bit, but that's okay. That's okay. One of the most epic moments in NBA history. Joining us right now via telephone, we have Roland Lanzenby. Roland, well-known sports writer, prolific veteran sports writer. That's the way I'm going to describe Roland. First off, Roland, hey, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jordan.
Let's talk a little bit about why you are joining us. This may be the centerpiece of your work. A lot of critics are calling it the most acclaimed biography on Michael Jordan. It's called The Life, and that's exactly what this book is, Roland. you really dig deep into the roots. I mean, we go all the way back to Jordan's family ties. It is very, very descriptive, and you really hit home before his basketball days leading in to who we know as Michael Jordan today.
Right. You know, I wanted to build it from the family up, so to speak. Michael had the distinction of living with four generations of Jordan males. His great-grandfather was born in 1891 and died when Michael was 14.
Absolutely. You know, it's stuff like that that we're just not aware of. I mean, it's absolutely fascinating stuff. So, Roland, this gave you an opportunity to kind of dissect Michael Jordan, the person. Now, I know that you're not unfamiliar with the Chicago Bulls. You have written several books and articles on Chicago throughout the years. And I know Michael Jordan didn't help you out directly with this biography, but you've talked to Michael on several occasions over the past, 20 years?
Right. And, you know, he... Well, give me time. I go to a Bobcats game. He's a friendly guy. He'll come up and shake my hand, and we'll chat about what's going on, and then he'll give me a sit-down interview every now and then. But I went and told him I was doing this book. No one likes having a biography written about them. But, you know, Michael, to his credit, has not really tried to stop this, and a lot of his friends and former teammates and various people have talked for it.
So as far as getting to know Michael Jordan, Roland, I guess the first question that I'm going to ask you was, why is he so polarizing? What has made Michael Jordan, if not the most well-known athlete of all time, definitely the most marketable athlete of all time? What is it that he possesses that puts him on that pedestal?
Well, I think it really begins with his great success as a player. If you had a team that was a favorite other than the Chicago Bulls, the chances are he frustrated you and your team. And if you were a Bulls fan, then Michael Jordan was a great player, but he wasn't in the afterlife, so to speak, or in his second act. He was with the Washington Wizards, or he was the Charlotte Bobcats, and the things he did there just weren't very interesting, and they weren't of the same order as the things he did as a player when he was, frankly, a magician.
You know, one part in this book that you kind of dig into, and I found it very interesting, and if you're a Boston Celtic fan, you'll love the fact when you talk about the series where Jordan dropped 63 on the Celtics. Hey, the Celtics swept the Bulls that season. Yet it's so polarizing to go back and talk about an event like that, because I think the history books, if you didn't know any better, Roland, they would sing a different tune. We look at that series for Michael Jordan where he was just, that was the beginning of it. This is where we realized that Michael Jordan was going to be the next big thing, yet the Bulls lost that series. So I think you can kind of go back to that, to what he meant as an individual player.
Right. Casey Jones, the coach of the Celtics in that series, didn't even bother to scheme for Michael Jordan. They just said, well, we'll let him score. It's not really that big a deal. We won't even double-team him. And, of course, after he scored, they decided, well, maybe we better do something after he lit them up so thoroughly and completely. And they went on and, of course, swept and went on to the next series and to win the NBA title that year.
So you can break this book down into categories. You talked about the family ties, which is exactly what you wanted to build from the ground up. We can talk about his days in college, where Jordan coming out. I mean, I don't even know if Michael was considered the best player on that North Carolina team, Roland. I think there's a couple of players that you can make the argument had more of an impact. Yet it wasn't until, I guess we could say the 63-point game where this guy really started to take off. But even then, it's so interesting to read about the Jordan days. And again, you can recap that with the Dean Smith era.
Right. And, you know, the thing that was so difficult, NBA executives had complained for a long time that Dean Smith's offense at the University of North Carolina hid the talents and the athleticism of his players, and it made it very hard to judge them in drafting. And so some of that played into, I know the Portland people have been somewhat bitter for years, and they've often fussed about Dean Smith, that they didn't really realize how good Michael Jordan was.
In any of the conversations that you have had with Michael in the past, I know he's referred to Dean Smith as his second father, but at the same time, does he have any resentment towards Dean Smith, or does he buy into that sentiment that he did kind of restrict him?
Well, some people got the impression from the Hall of Fame speech that Michael had resentment. In the Hall of Fame speech, Michael, he didn't do it well, but he was just trying to explain all these different things that fed his competitive nature, and it came across as immensely negative. I will say Jerry Krause, the former Bulls GM, in his interviews alleged that Dean Smith actually kicked Michael Jordan out of the University of North Carolina, that they were having some differences. And others said that wasn't the case, but it is interesting to look at what happened at that time. Michael had a dunk against the University of Maryland that was just stupendous, and the ACC used it to promote the conference, but Dean Smith refused. He was so angry, he refused to even allow footage of it on his coaching show.
Roland, I want to move away from the college game. I want to go back to you here for a second. We're going to jump around in this interview. We could talk about Michael Jordan, the way this guy strived under pressure. When you take on a project like a biography on a Michael Jordan, I'm sure there's some immense pressure on your end as well.
Yes, you know, as things go on, these books, particularly if a publisher begins to pay you really well to do them, it takes on a lot of pressure. I know that I felt a lot of pressure in writing the biography of Jerry West for ESPN. And the Jordan book was immensely difficult because of all of the challenges and the difficulty of some of the controversial things. It does take on a very different burden.
Being joined right now via telephone by Roland Lazenby. He is the author of the new Michael Jordan biography, The Life. It was released on May 6th. Roland, you bring up the controversy aspects of Michael Jordan's career, and I can't help but assume that part of that has to go with the gambling addiction, which is also mentioned in the book.
Right, it is. And, you know, again, Michael, on both sides of his family, his ancestors, his grandfather on his mother's side and his great-grandfather, Dawson Jordan, were both moonshiners on the coastal plain of North Carolina during the days of Jim Crow. These were very tough men in a very tough age. And some of that edge obviously has traveled through to Jordan's personality. He has a toughness in dealing with teammates and, well, virtually everything that he's done. That sort of moonshining edge, you can see it.
Roland, I want your opinion on this particular aspect. Michael Jordan, like any other great athlete, has flaws. I mean, no human being is perfect. However, it seems that some of those flaws may be overlooked because it's Michael Jordan. I know some athletes will get torn to shreds for all eternity for some mistakes in the past. What is it about Michael Jordan that makes him, I don't want to say above the law, but it makes people have a short-term memory? What is it about this guy?
Well, you know, I think he's so magical. And I think that people who have an exceptional gift are often, I don't want to say given an easier path, but they have such adulation that people will overlook things. You know, in 1998, I had to ask Michael about how tough he was with his teammates, and I couldn't figure out how I was going to do it. I finally posed the question this way: Michael, you're such a great team leader, and so, but people say your methods are harsh, and so. By doing that, he was actually eager to talk about how harsh he is with teammates. And he said, I don't do it just to be harsh. I do it to get them ready to play. And some of his teammates said, well, that's good, but sometimes it seems like he's just doing it to be harsh.
So my next question would be, today in the world of free agency like we have it in the NBA, did players stray from playing alongside Michael Jordan? Obviously, there's going to be tons of pressure, tons of expectations when you play with one of the greatest to ever do it. But because of that mentality, do you believe that certain players strayed away from Michael Jordan, didn't want to be a part of the same team as this guy?
Well, you know, when Michael went away to baseball and he came back to a whole new roster. And all those new players who had never played with Michael before, they were sitting around thinking, gosh, we're going to get to be Michael Jordan's teammate. And Chip Schaefer, who was a trainer of the team, was listening to him. He was thinking, you guys have no idea how difficult it's going to be the teammate of Michael Jordan. Steve Kerr was one of those guys talking about how great it was going to be. The next fall in practice is when Jordan punched Kerr in the face in a tiff over some practice stuff. And so usually it wasn't a physical punch. He could deliver a barb or he could belittle you with a comment. Things like that. But sometimes it was physical, too.
Being joined right now via telephone by Roland Lazenby as we talk about his latest biography, Michael Jordan, The Life. Roland, we got to get out for a quick commercial break. I would love for you to hang around for one more segment if you have the time.
I'm happy to do that.
Fantastic. We'll take a quick break. We're back with plenty more Drive Time Sports right after this.
Mom guilt. We all feel it. Our after-school hours are packed with games, practices, lessons, homework. Between work, grocery shopping, laundry, cleaning the house, how do you do it all and still get a delicious meal on the table every night? Moms, it's time to let it go. KFC has dinner covered. Pick up an 8-piece meal deal tonight. KFC's Extra Crispy $20 fill-up has 8 pieces of crunchy extra crispy chicken, a large coleslaw, 4 biscuits, and 2 large mashed potatoes and gravy. Enough for the whole family. Feed the family and make it to all your events, too. With KFC, it's all always a win-win.
Hello, this is Dr. Blake Hillstead from Castle Valley Orthodontics. We are a state-of-the-art orthodontic office specializing in braces and Invisalign for children, teenagers, and adults. We provide complimentary consultations to help you achieve the best smile possible. We accept most insurance plans in Carbon and Emory counties and also accept all Medicaid insurance plans. In addition, we offer flexible in-house financing at 0% interest to make orthodontic treatment fit within any budget. Call for a free consultation with me, Dr. Blake Hillstead, at 435-637-2222.
Hi, this is Joe Peterson, the Chancellor of USU Eastern. I'm here to brag about an amazing student we have representing USU Eastern. Chandler Vincent is a welding student here at USU Eastern. He recently flew to Huntsville, Alabama to compete in the U.S. Open Welding Trials. After 4 days of nonstop welding, Chandler was named the USA World Skills Welding Champion. With this title, Chandler won $40,000 in tools and scholarships from the American Welding Society. Congratulations, Chandler. For more stories about the incredible students that we have here at USU Eastern, see our website, usueastern.edu.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Golden Eagles.
Back here on Drive Time Sports. Right now we have a special guest with us, Roland Lazenby, as he talks about his latest biography, Michael Jordan, The Life. It is in stores right now. It was released on May 6th. Roland, we'll jump right back into the conversation. We briefly dipped into some of the controversy in this biography on Michael Jordan. The gambling. Let's talk about this, because anyone who actually, you know, will follow Michael Jordan, anybody who has a great understanding of what this guy was able to accomplish, they also know that he had many flaws, and gambling would be one of them.
No question, and those flaws remain very much with him today. He at the NBA All-Star Game in 2007 in Las Vegas, Adam Pac-Man Jones was there shooting dice with Jordan. Jordan wouldn't let Jones touch the dice, but Jones won $1 million that night and watched Jordan lose $5 million. Jones detailed that in an interview with me for the book. And to me, that's a perfect example, or it proves him an important point. Some people like to follow the conspiracy theory that Jordan was suspended from the NBA for gambling. But if he's standing at All-Star Weekend while he's waiting to be approved as owner of the Charlotte franchise, he sure doesn't act like someone who's been suspended. His point is, and I think it's an important one, I've never bet on basketball. I've never bet on any of these things. And so I have the money. It's why can't I do what I want? And the NBA pretty much has that hands-off approach with people like Charles Barkley. And I talked to Jerry Krause about it. You know, Jerry Krause and Jordan have sort of been enemies, even though they were in the same franchise. Pardon me. And Jerry Krause said, you know, Jordan showed up every night. He played his heart out. You know, the NBA has long been, back in the days when they rode on passenger trains, it's been a league of gamblers, and it's been that way throughout. Now, they, you know, the rule is they're not to bet on their own sport or their own teams or against their own teams, but NBA teams go to Las Vegas. The players go there to gamble, and it's pretty much a legalized form. It's shocking to people that Jordan would be gambling and losing that much money, but it's not illegal.
You know, it's a very interesting topic because I had a conversation with somebody around the NBA, I want to say about a month ago, when the whole Donald Sterling case was floating around and the rumor of Floyd Mayweather being interested in buying the Los Angeles Clippers was brought up. And I thought, there's no way the NBA would allow somebody who's a compulsive gambler like Floyd Mayweather to own an NBA franchise. Aha! But they did allow Michael Jordan. So obviously, that's not a problem.
And, you know, Jordan has gotten a lot of grief for his effort as an owner of the Charlotte franchise. But by the time you look at it, it is difficult to be a franchise owner. But he's actually reestablished trust. Charlotte was a terrible situation for the NBA, a Chernobyl of sorts. The Hornets were so fabulous there, and then George Shinn, the owner, just ruined them. And so they had to leave town. There was no one coming to their games. They went to New Orleans. They brought in the new franchise. The rollout with Robert Johnson as owner of the Bobcats was terrible. And over time, since he's become owner, it hasn't been easy, and he's made his share of mistakes. But Jordan has reestablished trust with the fan base. The best evidence of that being that they were packed to the rafters for the first-round playoff series with the Miami Heat.
Roland, I got to move on to a topic that's definitely going to strike a chord with the Utah listening base. I want to talk about the NBA Finals. Jordan had two encounters with the Utah Jazz, and this is also covered in detail in this biography. Absolutely fascinating stuff. Jordan ends his career in a Bulls uniform with a three-peat. Again, two of those championships coming against the Utah Jazz.
Against a great, great Utah Jazz team.
Absolutely. I mean, you talk about the Utah Jazz. Had there not been those Michael Jordan Bulls, we're probably talking about the Jazz winning back-to-back championships, hands down.
And Jerry Sloan, I have to add, in addition to being one of my favorite players of all time, is certainly one of my favorite coaches.
Absolutely. Known legend here in the state of Utah, and rightfully so. Roland, let's dig into the NBA Finals. I want to talk about that final shot, knocking it down to defeat the Jazz in Game 6. In Utah, they won't let it go. They say it's a foul Jordan pushed off on Byron Russell. Give me your thoughts on this, and have you ever talked to Michael about that particular shot?
You know, I have not. I have to admit, other than, you know, covering the game. But I will tell you that it looks from all replays to have been an obvious push-off, and it would certainly have gone from being his greatest moment to resonating one of his greatest failures, his final game in high school with a team that was supposed to win the state championship, in which Jordan is called for an offensive foul, fouls out at the end, and his team loses. A very bitter, bitter thing for him that he will not discuss to this day. And so it could easily have gone from being a nightmare for Jazz fans to being something much more satisfying. However, as we all know, no call was made.
You got to cover that series in depth, both of those series. Roland, what was the bigger story before that final shot? Was it Michael Jordan in the NBA Finals, or was it Karl Malone's inability to come through in the clutch? Because that's also something that still resonates with Jazz fans when you reflect on the two NBA Finals appearances.
Well, you know, obviously, You have a great career, as Carl Malone did. You come through so many times. You get into those moments. You know, I have to think when you ask that of Phil Jackson, and no coach in his right mind would turn off the lights in a practice session daily, as tough as practice time is in the NBA, and have his players sit there in the dark and meditate. No coach would have his players work with a mindfulness expert the way Phil Jackson had them work with George Mumford. But the whole goal of that was to prepare his players for those high-stress moments, because every year in the playoffs we see it happen. It is it doesn't matter. There is always someone who folds in that situation. There's so much pressure. And Karl Malone, for all that he delivered, you know, had his moments against the Bulls there where he could not get it done.
Two more questions for you, Roland, before I let you go. I know we're running short on time, so I'm going to throw this out there. Scottie Pippen, he is mentioned from time to time in this book, so I got to ask you, is there a player that is a player of that level of greatness like a Scottie Pippen that has been more overshadowed during his career in the NBA? Because I make the argument all the time, Scottie Pippen's the greatest on-ball defender I've ever seen, and yes, he's one of the top 50 greatest players to ever play. Is there another player who had a more, I guess, unfair shake in not getting the full credit than Scottie Pippen?
No way. No Pippen, no rings for Chicago. And, you know, Phil Jackson pitted Michael Jordan against Scottie Pippen in practice when Pippen was a young player. And those were brutal, brutal exchanges. And through that process, Pippen became ready to face so much of what they would face later. Pippen, a great, great player, and obviously, and in the shadow of the magician that Jordan was, no, he doesn't get the credit. But Jordan knows. I think it bothers Pippen to this day. But you know, there, sports is not friendly like that. It treats people all sorts of ways, and ultimately, the game will break your heart usually.
Last question, Roland, before I let you go. You also have a work, the first book I ever read written by you. That was the NBA Education of Kobe Bryant, Mad Game. You've dissected Kobe. You've dissected Michael Jordan. Are the comparisons fair? And what do you believe is the most comparable aspect between the two guys as you dug deep into both of their careers and their mindset?
Right. You know, it is. I had a chance to sit down with Michael for about 30 minutes in 2008. And a big part of our conversation was Kobe Bryant. And Michael had, at that time in that interview, a high degree of appreciation for Kobe Bryant. Obviously, they both played in the triangle offense. They both played for Phil Jackson and Tex Winter. And Kobe Bryant modeled his game on Michael Jordan. In fact, Michael told me, I basically showed Kobe how to play. But he said, that's no big deal, because Dr. J showed me how to play. David Thompson showed me how to play. He said, that's just basketball. That's the evolution of the game. And, of course, Kobe, when I told him about sitting down with Michael, he was suddenly like a 12-year-old kid. His ears perked up, and he said, what? MJ was talking about me? What did he have to say? And so it means a great deal to both of them. I will say this, all that flies out the window if they step on the floor as together. As MJ aged, of course, Kobe took great advantage of his aging and embarrassed Michael Jordan several times. But in their prime, you know, it would be a tough matchup, but I just don't think there are many people that can match up to Jordan.
Roland Lainsby, he's author of the new Michael Jordan biography, The Life. Roland, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us on air today.
Much enjoyed it. Take care.
Castleview Hospital would like to thank the 2017 Castleview Board of Trustees for all their hard work and dedication in making the community healthier. Thank you to Lamar Guyman, Scott Justison, MD, Glenn Etzel, MD, Eric Lyman, MD, John Pressett, MD, Bryce Briner, Errol Holt, CEO Mark Holyoke, Mike Jensen, and Colleen Loveless. Your hospital and the community you serve appreciate all that you do.
Southern Sutherland's After Christmas sale is going on now, but only while supplies last. All remaining winter jackets are only $12.99. Pocket-sized LED flashlights are $6.99. Get lightweight, portable 1,000 lumens LED work light only $14.99. Plus, save 15% off all in-stock space heaters. Keep your pipes safe from freezing this winter with heat tape. Choose from 5 different lengths, all on sale. Remember our feathered friends this winter. Get 20-pound bags of bird food for only $7.99. Don't miss Sutherland's After Christmas sale.
Tis the season for shopping, and sales seem to be popping up everywhere. Well, Desert View Federal Credit Union has got a sale for you. How about a car loan for 2.99% APR? That's right, now you can save on interest too by getting your auto loan at Desert View Federal Credit Union. Go ahead, get that new car for Christmas. This holiday loan special won't be around for long, so be sure to get into a branch today.
Membership and eligibility apply. Loans on approved credit. Member NCUA.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Oakland-born Damian Lillard.
Now, what a second season for Damian Lillard.
Last year's Rookie of the Year, an All-Star this year. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it! Win the series for the first time in 14 years!
This is Damian Lillard from the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with George Buscarini on KOAL 750 AM.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Also streaming live at CastleCountryRadio.com. Extremely excited about our next guest, Roland Lazenby. He is the author of the critically acclaimed bestsellers Jerry West, The Life and Legend of a Basketball Icon, and Michael Jordan, The Life. He also has numerous other books. He spent the past three decades interviewing NBA players, coaches, and staff members while also writing about the league. No doubt, there's no doubt that Roland ranks amongst the finest sports biographers of our time. His most recent work is a book that was released in October. It's a biography on Kobe Bryant called Showboat, and Roland is joining us right now over the phone to talk about that book. Roland, it's great to get you back on the show. I know we had you back in 2014 when the Michael Jordan book was released, so I appreciate you making time for us again today.
Thank you, Jordan.
Let's start by talking about your latest work, Kobe Bryant Showboat. The first question I have for you is, why? Why Kobe Bryant? I mean, Michael Jordan in 2014, Kobe Bryant in 2016. I guess the two just work hand in hand, right?
Yes, and I think it's fair to say both are compelling figures. And if you're going to write a biography, you better find a compelling figure. In my case, I write a lot about hyper-competitive people. And I don't know any more hyper-competitive guys than those two.
It's true. I mean, when I read Michael Jordan, The Life, it almost took me to believing that this guy is a borderline sociopath. That's kind of what I took from Michael Jordan in reading, you know, his competitive nature. In your dealings with both of these guys and researching them the way that you have, is Kobe and Michael, are they really that comparable?
Well, they are in many ways, just as in many ways they are not. But yes, I think that everyone assumed that Kobe set out to mimic Michael, to make himself like Michael. And I think one of the clear points of the book is that actually it was Sonny Vaccaro and Adidas. Sonny Vaccaro had worked at Nike. He had been the champion of Air Jordan, and then he had a parting of the ways with Nike, and he went to Adidas, and he set out, Sonny Vaccaro did, to look for the next Jordan. And he wasn't expecting to find it in a kid like Kobe Bryant. But he did, and so suddenly Adidas began suggesting to this high school kid that he could be the next Jordan. And in fact, they offered not only Kobe a contract to turn pro out of high school, but they offered his parents money on the side to make sure it happened.
You know, this part of the book was so interesting to me, Roland, because in all the dealings that I've had with sports, talking to professional athletes, talking to those who were involved, I've always wondered just how crucial shoe contracts and agents truly are to the business of the sport. And in this regard, you mentioned Sonny Vaccaro. Without him, Kobe, I mean, there was talk of Kobe potentially going to LaSalle. I know he was really tempted to go to Duke and play with Coach K. Was this the straw that broke the back that sent Kobe to the NBA, this deal with Sonny Vaccaro?
Right, and because Kobe's father, Joe Jellybean Bryant, had played pro basketball for 16 years, people assumed the Bryant family was in good shape financially. It was not. Joe badly needed a job or he needed a deal. And so suddenly Kobe's career and his ability to turn pro out of high school, which was something no one did back then, but his ability to do that became a big factor in the family's finances. And of course, you know, Kobe is a guy who is game. Yeah, you present a challenge to him, he'll do it. But I think the evidence has a strong indication that Kobe really would have preferred to go to college. When he signed the contract with Adidas, you know, in his senior year of high school, he looked at Sonny Vaccaro and he said, "Mr. Vaccaro, is there any way my family could have had this money and I could still go to college and play basketball?" In all likelihood, that college would have been Duke, although his father had set up some great recruits and even had thoughts of being the head coach at LaSalle. That didn't happen, but what did happen is that Kobe became an Adidas signee and a Lakers draft pick.
Fascinating at the beginning of this book. And just so the listeners are aware, you developed a relationship with Kobe Bryant very young in his career. So, I mean, this is a book that was roughly 20, 23 years in the making, right?
It was. And, you know, Kobe, of course, went through a number of media friends as he went through the vagaries of his career. He would have different people at ESPN. And, you know, for a brief enough time, I was one of those. A couple of seasons, we had a closeness. But Kobe tended to change those friends. And he really made a clean sweep of friends and associates after the trouble in Colorado and the things that engulfed him there.
How did that change, Kobe, that incident in Colorado back in 2003?
Whoa, you know, to come so close to Kobe basically came very close to destroying himself. And he was very willful about this. It wasn't just Colorado. It was demanding trades of teammates and forcing the issue. He went through so many things. It was painful for people in the Lakers organization to watch all this damage that Kobe Bryant had done to himself by being so willful and headstrong. The thing that it allowed him to be a pro player at a young age with all these skills was also the thing that really allowed him to endanger his own life in many ways. And, you know, he really ripped up the world around him and then had to find the presence of mind and the good fortune to make a comeback. And he was able to do that. But I think the arc of his life was really about all of this self-destruction and then this ability and the good luck to put it all back together again.
Again, our guest right now is Roland Lansenby. He's the author of the book Kobe Bryant Showboat, which is on shelves right now. Roland, you talk about the self-destruction, the near self-destruction of Kobe's career. One of the things that I admire most about Kobe Bryant is the fact that this is a guy that was able to go out and perform no matter what was going on in his life. Trials, tribulations, it didn't matter. This guy was always there on the court. When I was in college, I wrote my senior thesis on the apologia tactics, comparing and contrasting Kobe Bryant and Tiger Woods. I'm amazed that it never showed in Kobe's game. Regardless what was going on behind the scenes, you never would have noticed in watching him play. One of the storybook games, I think, of his career that gets overlooked a lot, he missed the first half of a game while he was in Denver on trial, And he comes back, he hits a game-winning shot for the Lakers in the second half. I believe they beat the Nuggets, if I remember correctly, in that game. It never teetered his performance on the court at all.
Right, and you know, in the 2001 playoffs, he threw his family completely out of his life. I mean, he sold the house out from under them over a weekend. He towed their cars, closed down their credit cards, cut off phone communication. Basically, they had to exit his life. And he did that on the eve of the very eve of the 2001 playoffs, and then went out and played extremely well in helping the Lakers to a 15-1 dash through the playoffs. Of course, in the aftermath, he broke down sobbing in the locker room while his teammates were celebrating. But Kobe Bryant had this ability to, and he learned some of it from George Mumford, the mindfulness guy who worked with the Lakers and before that the Bulls. But Kobe learned how to really control his focus, and it allowed him to get through it until he finally broke down, because it was a very close family at one point.
Controlling his focus about 3 years into his career, you mentioned lost and lonely. That's how you could describe Kobe Bryant. And this is around the time, right, that you actually had developed that closeness with him.
Right. No, it was a sad time. I thought this kid is really, he was so ambitious. And this was in 98, 99, 2000, into 2001. This kid's really ambitious. He makes no bones about it. He's very out there about this ambition, and yet he really had to fight through three or four seasons of being totally and completely out of place on a veteran Lakers roster.
There was always talk of Kobe's rift with Shaquille O'Neal, these two never really getting along, or at times not getting along. I think one of the overlooked players in that young Lakers squad, you go back to the 98-99 season, Kobe didn't get along with Eddie Jones either, did he?
Well, actually, in some ways he did, because Eddie had a strong Philadelphia background, having played at Temple. And Eddie Jones had his own disagreements with Shaquille O'Neal. Now, it sounds a little crazy, but it wasn't a perfect detente. But, Eddie also was in conflict with Kobe, because even after he was drafted, Kobe went back to Philadelphia telling people that he was going to be the guy elevated by the Lakers, and Eddie was not. And, you know, Philadelphia is a small town. Making statements like that, I'm sure those got to Eddie Jones. And they had their conflicts, but they also had a strong respect for each other, tied to that Philly basketball culture. And Eddie had done things for Kobe to help him mature and advance over the years. So it was more of a gray area when it came to their conflicts. And so it was a little more complicated.
Fascinating stuff. Joined right now by Roland Lazenby. And Roland is going to stick around and join us for one more segment. When we return, we'll talk about the later stages of Kobe Bryant's career and also talk about some of the comparisons to Michael Jordan when we return here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
News Talk KOAL's Jordan Buscarini covers all the pros and lots more, like high school and college teams.
Straight away three ball. Good! Phillip Winston from the top of the key.
These are the sports that are closest to home. When you've got a guy like Jordan, you can cover it all. Drive Time Sports.
Here we go, here we go!
Weekdays from 4 to 5 on News Talk, 107.3 FM, 750 AM, KOAL.
You were listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Life in the fast lane, moving at the speed of life, and I can't slow down. Only got a gallon in the gas tank, but I'm almost at the finish line, so I can't stop now.
back on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM, 750 AM, KOAL. Continuing our conversation right now with Roland Lazenby, one of the great sports biographers of our time. His most recent work is The Conversation Today. It hit stores back in October, right around the start of the NBA season. Showboat, the Kobe Bryant story. Roland, during that last segment, you mentioned that you had developed some sort of closeness with Kobe during the early stages of his career. What's your relationship like with Kobe today? Do you talk to him still regularly?
No, I have no relationship. I notified I was doing the book. And, you know, with Michael, I went and was able to tell him in person that I was doing the book. He helped me a bit, but he was not happy. No one likes a biography being done. After the book was done, Michael shook my hand, but I haven't had occasion to visit with Kobe since the book came out. I don't think he dislikes it. It's not a book that sets out to vindicate Kobe in a lot of ways. It has a, just like anything, it just sort of has a straight-on look at him. Some of it's harsh, but it's not. But I think there are things there, as Michael Jordan, the life in ways, it portrayed the harsh side of Michael, but it also humanized him in some ways. Was hard to do. And I think this book, Showboat, portrayed a lot of the harsh elements of Kobe Bryant, but it also humanized him and further explained how things happened and why they happened. For an awful long time, people thought he was just this spoiled, precocious kid demanding to go to the Lakers. That was none of Kobe's concern. That was all the concern of Adidas. They wanted him in the top market.
I've always wondered how a spectator, a media member, anyone could actually sit and talk down upon any aspect of Kobe Bryant's game, talk down upon any aspect of his competitiveness. Why is it? What was it about Kobe Bryant that struck people the wrong way?
Well, I think the way that his parents launched him into pro basketball because of their need for money, I think it created tremendous resentment and a tremendous public relations problem for him. He was viewed as this guy who was trying to cut lines and, you know, trying to get in front of other people. And that wasn't just with fans. That was among veteran NBA players themselves. And as Rick Fox explained, it was a big issue with his Lakers teammates in those first two or three seasons. But, you know, this was a world that really wasn't of Kobe's making. It was more the motivation of his parents. Adidas paid him $300,000 on the side, and they needed that revenue. And, you know, his father, Joe Bryant, figured that the sooner you could get to the NBA, the sooner you could start making that pro-level money. And, you know, I think over time he's been shown to be right. I don't think there's a right and wrong in evaluating this. It just is. These are the facts. But I think the public viewed Kobe differently. I have to say that today, as a retired player, you see a Kobe Bryant who has ambitions in media and other things. But he is a person totally at peace with his competitive life. And, you know, the answer and the thing you're talking about that people really shouldn't be able to criticize him, because of anyone who's ever entered the NBA, there are a select few who have done absolutely everything possible to compete. You obviously can think of the great Jerry West. You can think of Jordan. There are a couple of guys there in Utah that come to mind, and Kobe Bryant is another one of these people who there was nothing left undone, no sacrifice unmade. And it cost Kobe in many ways. But, you know, I think he's a complete piece. I really do, by virtue of making the effort he made.
What's your favorite era? When you go back and you read the book or you look over the book, now that it's been published, it's out, people talk to you about it. I know you do radio shows quite frequently talking about the book. What was your favorite Kobe Bryant era, your favorite aspect to write on?
Well, you know, I loved it all, but I love going to Italy and going to the small mountain village in Tuscany where he lived as a 9, 10, 11-year-old and tracking down people who were older, 14, 15, 18-year-olds at the time who were playing pickup basketball on this beautiful little mountainside court. And all they could talk about was how fierce Kobe was as a 10-year-old kid, that there was never a smile on his face, that he was so driven, and there was, you know, there was nothing but utter and complete seriousness about his competing. There was obviously somewhere behind that mask, there was tremendous joy. But I really wanted to, in this book, I wanted to go find the organic Kobe. When I got to know Kobe when he was a rookie and forward, he was viewed as an interloper. He was viewed as a faker, someone who was faking his life to be like Michael Jordan. That didn't seem to jive with me, and I wanted to find independently all of these different people who had their experiences with him. And he is a born competitor, let's face it. You couldn't fake being like Jordan if you tried. And I think it just so happens that Jordan was this huge giant on the competitive landscape, and Kobe was a giant in the making. And he recognized that. And Jordan recognized that in Kobe and told me that personally. And Jordan had, you can tell when someone has the resentment or is sort of mocking, but Jordan had none of that in the conversations I had with him about Kobe. He obviously had deep respect because it was obvious all the work that Kobe had done to be what he was going to be.
Where does Showboat rank amongst your favorite works?
Well, my sister died the day I finished it. It was a brutal schedule with the publisher. It didn't need to be. It is a project in many ways I'm very proud of. In other ways, I didn't realize how sick my sister was. She had wanted me to come see her. I was writing 14 hours a day, literally 7 days a week, months on end, just a brutal schedule. And to have her pass unexpectedly the day I finished took me quite a while. I'm still not over it. You can hear my voice. And so it's hard for me to evaluate Showboat. It's still too painful for me to look at much.
Well, Roland, in my eyes, you're one of the great, if not the great, sports biographer of our time. I mean, I've enjoyed the work on Michael Jordan. I've enjoyed the work on the Kobe Bryant book. You also wrote about Stockton and Malone a while back, too, right? The Rise of the Utah Jazz.
It was a slim volume, but, you know, and also the great Jerry Sloan. What a tremendous competitive icon he was. Those guys really, as Sloan told me once years ago, he said, you know, it's a simple game if you lay your heart on the line every night. And that was the epitome. That was the credo of the Utah Jazz and Stockton and Malone. And those were such great fun teams to watch. And covering those finals between Utah and Chicago, that was just one of the peak experiences of my life.
You know what's so fun about this, Roland, as we talk about Kobe and the direct correlation to Michael. There's a direct correlation to Michael and Stockton and Malone, but there's also a correlation to Kobe and Stockton and Malone because of the infamous air ball that he put up his rookie season against the Jazz, a couple of air balls he put up against the Jazz at home. It's just funny how we can connect the dots to these NBA legends.
Right. The Jazz abused the Lakers like the Pistons abused the Bulls with Michael. And so they both sort of played a major role in the wedding of the stone and sharpening those teams into something. And, you know, a lot of just the fact that Kobe could shoot those air balls and recover, that was the first indication of the tremendous strength of character and personality he had.
Roland, it's a pleasure as always to get you on the show. I really appreciate you making time for us. You're also a terrific follow on Twitter as well, so please let the listeners know where they can keep tabs on you and follow your work.
It's at Lazenby, at LazenB as in boy, Y. And Jordan, I can't thank you enough for the kind words.
It's definitely my pleasure, Roland. Hopefully we can get you on again in the very near future.
Don't hesitate. Thank you, Jordan.
Sports Byline. Weeknights from 8 to 11 on News Talk 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM KOAL.